Welcome to the Modern Investing with Side Pocket podcast, where we find some of the brightest minds in investing, entrepreneurship, real estate, tech, and more, and ask them, how do you stay financially ahead of the curve in the dynamic world we live in? But before we start, a quick disclaimer, the content we are discussing through this channel should not be understood or construed as financial advice. Regardless of anything to the contrary, nothing available on or through this channel should be understood as a recommendation to buy or sell securities or constitute financial advice. With that out the way, let's get started. Today, we're here with Mike Clark, who began his career in investment banking, where he played a pivotal role in helping companies raise over $42 million. Now, as a distinguished financial advisor specializing in assembling financial teams for his clients, ensuring their financial plans are executed with clarity and efficiency. His expertise lies in transforming complex financial landscapes into streamlined and goal-oriented strategies. Mike, pleasure to have you here. Welcome to the show.
Arthur, man, I'm looking forward to this. So thank you.
Awesome. I'd love to just start in the beginning. What had you go into investment banking and what did you learn in that process that had you then pivot over into financial advisory?
Arthur, that's a great question. I didn't start in financial services at all. I actually went through a financial education process when I was working for Johnson & Johnson selling medical devices. I didn't come from money. I didn't have a relationship with money. And that's 99% of the people that are listening to this is that their financial literacy, which was mine, is near zero. And then I was introduced to a firm here in Utah where I am now that walked me through six different meetings, attorneys, life insurance, health insurance, entity structures, and really understood how the wealthy manage teams. And then I was introduced to a gentleman that wanted to raise money through self-directeds, which a lot of people don't understand the power of self-directed IRAs. Maybe it's a different conversation. And long story short, he backed that project and he asked me to go raise him $35 million, and I had zero knowledge of that. And that's how I got into the investment banking side. I just said, sure, I'll go raise you $35 million. I have no network, no knowledge, or no experience, nothing about it. I'll do that. And I did. I ended up raising the $42 million for a handful of companies. And then I was at a crossroads and with my licenses, and I really wanted to create more value in the world, Arthur. And I wasn't doing that with investment banking. So going through my MBA program, I learned about a process of really developing a mission and a vision statement. Mm-hmm. And what came of that was going back to my financial education and helping others learn the same thing that I learned so they can move forward in a more clear path. And that's how I got into the retail side of financial advisory.
Awesome. And I definitely would like for you to just share a little bit about the self-directed IRAs, and if you could just share what those are, how they're used, and where do you feel that people are missing the opportunity there?
So right now, like there's a shift in the market really from trusting big banks. And I certainly understand that, and there's a place for the big banks. However, what they offer retail clients, especially a lower end, and I can't say lower income, people with lower investable assets, right? There's not a lot of resources for them to make investments. And over the last 10 years, there have been sites like Realty Mogul or Apartments. There's dozens of them. You can just look online, crowdfunding for retail investors, right? And there's a host of them. And what self-directed IRAs do is they allow just a normal investor to take qualified money and invest into anything they want. There are some restrictions, right? You can't do life insurance, you can't do art. But other than that, you can, instead of putting money into stocks, bonds, mutual funds, which are great tools, if you have expertise in, say, AI, or you have expertise in a certain field, then I'm going to venture to guess that there are companies out there that are looking for money to do what they do. So you have an expertise that instead of putting your money just blindly into a buy and hold strategy, put money into something that you have expertise in, that you have knowledge in, that you can do due diligence in, and get that rate of return versus just a normal average rate of return.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And then you got the whole tax benefit with it as well. And yeah, there are definitely those rules, right, where you can't use that to invest in your own business. And
yep.
There's different limitations, so you don't really game the system.
Right? Yeah. There's no self-dealing. But look, if you want to go, and I tell my clients this all the time, if you have knowledge of a certain real estate market and you want to go invest in real estate, like a rental income or a rental property in that market, then do that. Use qualified money, follow the rules, and go do what you want to do. Don't do what I want you to do. Follow what you want. Then you have more, you have your teeth in it, your passions in it. Now you're doing something that you want to do. This is my investment and I control it. So that's what self-directed help people do.
Nice. And so I'm assuming you have a self-directed account?
Yeah. Matter of fact, I know it sounds weird because you and I talked about this. Like my goal is to set up self-directed for all the grandkids and before they even know what money is. But absolutely, self-directed are amazing. Great tool.
And how are you investing your self-directed IRA?
So there's one little something we talked before we jumped online here is I do options. So I can do options within the self-directed, but we've got a couple online platforms, some crowdfunding platforms that I've invested into, some small projects, a couple of the real estate platforms, looking at an AI company that I met with yesterday. Matter of fact, Mark, a gentleman that you introduced me to, it's diversified, we'll call it that.
Mm-hmm. Got it. And what's your strategy in picking these investments? I know you mentioned you're picking stuff that you know. What's your overall thesis with what you're deciding to invest in and how you're managing your self-directed portfolio?
So how I look at that is, and you and I were talking about this off camera, is having rules, right? When you trade anything or when you look at investments, the thing is to establish your own rules for investing. And it's a process. So the upside with a lot of these platforms now is they're free to sign up. So go sign up for all of them. Start looking at the documentation and start reading what that documentation says. What's the rate of return? What's the investment strategy? And if you don't understand it, then ask somebody. Ask the platform, ask a mentor, ask somebody. But if you don't understand it, don't invest. But what I do is I follow certain check marks, right? For me, residential real estate, a single property right now is for me not good. I understand that high density housing is a more of a future play. So I'm putting self-directed into larger apartment complexes, senior care. So you have to look at some of the trends, what's going on. It's just, and I don't mean to pick on a lot of people, Arthur, but at the end of the day, like I tell people, stop spending Sunday afternoon watching 18 football games. Like look at, just take one game, spend 2 hours. Instead of watching 8 games, watch 7 and take that one game and go look at some financial news. There's an abundance of resources that we have now on our handheld devices that we can get knowledge and help make better financial decisions.
Yeah, this podcast included.
Absolutely. And we're going to cover a lot of things. So there's just a lot. And the downside is there's a lot of noise in the industry, in the market. So find something that aligns with you. That's what I always tell clients is that if your passion is X, then invest in that. Don't try to deviate away from what you want to do. It just makes you uncomfortable. It's going to create more questions and doubt. Just get the guidance when you look at that opportunity. That's it.
Mm-hmm. And what attracted you to the real estate industry? Out of everything you mentioned, you really highlighted the residential opportunities and senior care, of course, this booming population.
Yeah.
But do you have any background in real estate that you've done lots of transactions in the past?
I don't know. So here's the interesting thing is that, and once again, this goes back to what you and I were talking about before we jumped on, is that you follow the money. Arthur, that's it, right? And if you look at hedge funds, if you look at large funds, their core most oftentimes is real estate. And then why is it real estate? Because it's typically speaking, now we'll see how the next year and a half play out. We'll see how that happens. But let's take the banks, for example. They invest heavily into commercial properties because it has been historically steady eddy growth. It's perfectly steady, right? It's nothing glamorous. It's not going to go up and down. It's steady eddy. So if you look at large funds, they do the same principle. And then so they had this large sum of money, that steady Eddie, it's protected against an asset, real estate. And then all the other money, they go into swinging for crazy things, private equity, IPOs, options, currencies, cannabis. And if one of these goes down, it's okay because we have the core, right? If a lot of them go down, then we've got a problem. But that's why the diversification on the higher volatility things, the real estate is a hedge against things going sideways on everything else.
Got it. Yeah, they have that core. And then of course, if you're directly or in REITs, you have the tax benefits of real estate as well.
Yep.
Depreciation, all of that. And I definitely want to touch on also like the other side of your portfolio, which is you swinging for the fences, which is, I'm assuming, if I heard correctly, crowdfunding and options trading, right?
Yeah, yes. And there's a lot of, look, and I think it was 2016 or 2015 with the Secure Act, it opened up the door for everybody on the planet to invest alongside private equity. And so a friend of mine just launched a crowdfunding for a hotel project that they're working on. I can't talk about the details, but it's online. There are an abundance of cannabis companies that are raising money from the crowd through a Reg CF offering or a Reg A offering. So because the government changed the rules, before all of these private equity investments were only for accredited investors that had a lot of money, and it was just reserved for them. But when they did the Secure Act, they literally opened the door for these small companies to go raise money from unsophisticated, they call them unsophisticated investors. It's a horrible word, but right. It's for anybody that makes less than $250,000 a year. And you can put in $1,000, $5,000, $10,000. You can put in small chunks and be a pool of a larger sum of money and get the same rates of return that private equity people get. And just, you just go online and look up crowdfunding investments. And I'm telling, there's no shortage of opportunities.
Yeah, definitely. And it, some of them are even, the minimums are as low as $100.
$100. Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely.
So what's your strategy in crowdfunding? Because it is directly into companies and there's no audited financials, no publicly available data that's been prepared. So what's your due diligence process and what do you look for in your crowdfunding deals?
So the upside going back is like every opportunity has a deck. So look through the deck. If I don't understand the deck, it's a no-go. It's simple as that, right? I look for trending things, right? I'm not going to go put my money into, say, a Polaroid camera opportunity, right? It's got to be, I'm not going to put money into Blockbuster, let's say that, right? It's got to be trending. If you look at what's going on in the world and it's moving very fast, like what is the next technology? And I don't know who said it, but it was one of those things that if you're looking to build another iPhone, you're late, right? So what's that next thing that you could put in $1,000? Now, look, if it's your only $1,000, then that's a different conversation. But if you could put in $100 of $1,000 and do 10 different opportunities, and you get 12, 13, 14% return on, say, six of those or five of those, you're doing exactly what the hedge funds do and the private equity guys do, just smaller amounts of money. And then you just rinse and repeat. Now, if you know how to manage that on a tax strategy basis through, say, self-directed Roth IRA, now you're growing that money tax-free.
Yeah.
So like, you just...
Like Peter Thiel.
Exactly. Phenomenal story. So phenomenal that the government doesn't want you talking about it. Phenomenal. They're upset with him. Phenomenal. They're trying to change the rules. Phenomenal. But here's the thing with politicians, and I don't mean to get political, but both sides of the aisle, they will never change the rules because they have money in those rules. And as much as they say about changing the tax code, they're not going to change the tax code. There's no such thing as a tax loophole. They know the rules. You do not. So learn the rules. That's all. Just learn the rules.
Yeah. And in your crowdfunding, you mentioned you look for things that are trending. What are some of your current investments, if you can share?
Yeah. So I'm looking right now AI. Anything that, for me personally, anything that has to do with senior care, right? Not to get down in the dumps, but roughly 3 out of 4 males are going to experience some sort of cognitive decline. I think it's 2 out of 4 females. We are, and this is not going into nutritional side of things, because my undergrad in kinesiology, by the way, is completely off topic. But if you look at where we're going health-wise, that's a massive trend. And if you look at other cultures around the world, Japan went through this in the 90s. They went to it, what they call the demographic cliff, right? We're getting to a point where our seniors, our baby boomers, are going to start dying at a very rapid rate. But what happened in Japan is they didn't have the infrastructure to house them, medical care them, and they went through a massive downturn in their market, which they're still experiencing today. We in America are not quite the numbers of Japan, but we are going to that demographic cliff. They are aging at a massive rate. We do not have the housing for senior care, let alone any sort of care facilities, cognitive decline, the whole spectrum. Individuals that just aren't able to function without help, whatever that may be. We don't have those facilities. So I look at trends like that, and it's real estate backed. So look, it's not going anywhere. So those are probably, for me right now, those are the two trending that I look for.
Awesome. And as far as your options trading side of things, which we did touch on off camera.
Yeah.
What's your strategy there? How did you be? Because I know options with most investors, myself included, it's something that we're really afraid of until we start learning more. How did you get into options trading, and where did you just pick up your strategy there?
So I learned about options trading when I moved to Utah. We had a gentleman that was, we put money into a private equity pool, and he was trading options for us and doing quite well. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is brilliant. How do you do this? And I learned a little bit from him. And then I just started picking up books. And at one point in time, there was this, there was an app on the phone, our iPhones, for iTunes University, that you could learn about different techniques, and you learn about anything from universities, and they took that off. So that was the second thing. The third thing is I just started buying small courses. I wasn't spending thousands of dollars on courses. It was like $100 here, $100 there, and really learning what options were. And then it was probably 5 or 6 years ago, I learned about the dark pool of liquidity, which, by the way, is a whole nother market that you and I never see. And for the longest time, these massive institutions would buy these stocks at large blocks for millions and millions of dollars. Or these directors would sell options, or their own options, or their own shares in these companies, like 3 or 4 million at a time. And what you and I, the retail investors, we never saw that data. And they don't have to report that data for 3 days later. And so a long time ago, Warren Buffett came out and said, look, if you're buying an equity that is trending up, you're already late. And what he means by that is the why that is moving momentum-wise is because all of these trades that happened 3 days ago, and they're just now reporting. Mm-hmm. So as you and I get into something, as soon as it starts to tick up, they're already pulling out. So as soon as you and I get in, it starts to retrace. Mm-hmm. And so I learned how to get that data. Like, I don't want to follow retail investors. I want to follow the money.
Yeah.
What are they doing? What if there's a whole board of directors liquidating their shares? I'm not saying it's insider trading, but they know something that I don't. And if for some reason they think their share is here and they're going to sell their shares because something's going to happen, it's going to drop the share price, then that's an opportunity for an option.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the other side of the options, is that one, you can make money up or down. I don't care what the market does. If it goes up, great. If it goes down, now it's a guess on which one it is, but it's a whole different conversation. But the key thing is understand your rules, learn what the system is, and just play for what you can lose. That's it.
Yeah. And it's, and it seems like, you know, based on the variety of things you're involved in, I think the underlying commonality is that you're not getting into anything you haven't done your homework on.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And this goes back to the investment banking side, is understanding where the flow of money comes from, right? And how these companies raise money and look at money, and just a little bit of technical analysis. And the upside is you can get an abundance of knowledge for free on YouTube on how to read a chart. It's not rocket science. And I could take any, matter of fact, I had a client yesterday. He was using a robo advisor, and he had like 16 investments in his robo advisor, and they're all buy and hold strategies. And I was like, well, let's take these three. And they all had different names, Arthur, but I put them on Yahoo Finance, and all three of the equities were identical in terms of the chart over the last 2 years. And my question was, you don't read charts, have you? Do you? And he's like, no. Have you ever read a chart? No. Do you see a pattern in that? And he's like, yeah. So are you really diversified? No. If you're looking at a chart, whether you have experience or not, you can see patterns. And so I would encourage anybody to go to YouTube, look up technical analysis, and just get some knowledge. And it doesn't matter if you're looking at Apple or some startup company. I guess startups aren't on, they don't have charts, but is that, yeah. Look at the highs and lows, and you can see patterns. And you can, I'm not saying you can predict, but there are flows, and invest with those flows.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned, because from what you're sharing, you're very well diversified through your self-directed IRA. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming you probably also work out of a brokerage account when you max out your contributions.
Yeah. So we've got the self-directed is managed through a custodian, and then everything else is through brokerage accounts. Yeah, absolutely.
Got it. And the strategies you mentioned, crowdfunding, residential real estate, senior care, these are investments that are buy and hold, right? And you're really discouraged buy and hold. You promote more of a tactical, active approach to investing. So is there a place for buy and hold, and there's a place for approaching investing tactically?
Oh, that's a great question, Arthur. So there are some things, like say the alternatives, right? Private equity, real estate. Some of those are, you don't have an option, right? Now, the upside is that you're going to get a rate of return, right? But some of them are four-year holds. Some of, if you go to realtymogul.com, those are typically 12 to 13-month notes. So they're shorter timeframes. But if you're looking at a traditional market, I don't believe in a buy and hold strategy. I think there's too many things in the market, too many things pulling on the equities, which creates the volatility. And this very old mathematical formula, which is really why I help clients identify self-directed options, because this very old mentality of mathematical equation is wealth equals money times rate times time. So wealth equals money times rate times time. What they tell you is that in order for you to get wealthy, Arthur, just continue to give me money at an average rate of return over time, and that creates the wealth. And what we're finding is that's not true. It's not true. Matter of fact, I just came across this morning, not because of you and I, it just happened across. In 2023, the average American retiree had about $170,000 in retirement savings. Okay, so we have a problem with people starting young and not building a retirement fund. Another problem that if people do start young, they pull money along the way for things they shouldn't be pulling the money for. But at the end of the day, this very old mathematical formula that the traditional system has just drilled into us does not work. Mm-hmm. And so that's what these alternatives help. But also, if you just think that you're going to buy and hold something forever, then it's not going to work. Because the second part of that fallacy is the stock market, and this is going to blow people's minds. The stock market is not compounding. It does not compound. So get that out of your head. Do the math. It's an appreciating asset. It's not compounding.
Mm-hmm.
So let that one sink in for a second.
Yeah. So two things there that was really interesting. In that equation, what's missing in there is risk, right?
Oh, and yeah.
In the alternatives, you have fixed deal terms. This is the property. This is the thing. This is the rate of return. This is when you get paid back. And it's all the full strategies built, probably less so in crowd than that. But in the public market, it's just keep giving money and then we'll keep growing. There's no real risk management there.
None.
And you're hoping for that, again, that 10% per year return and risking a potential drop of like 50 to 30%, like we see consistently. So how do you manage that in the public markets?
So what the firm that I work with, we do, it's somewhat of an active management strategy. So there's layers to our investments. And given the level of risk, because everything's based off of risk to your point, and we quantify that risk by a simple questionnaire. And then we align the client with a portfolio that with that risk number, right? So the portfolio risk matches their emotional tolerance to risk. Because anybody, Arthur, can talk about rates of return and nobody is going to call me Pete off if I get them 11 or 12% return. But to your point, if the market drops 30%, they're probably going to call and fire me. Mm-hmm. So what we want to do is we want to see what's going on in the markets across all of the markets, across all of the positions, what's moving, what's not, get ourselves out of positions that are trending downwards and mitigate that downside risk. Because this is where math and money don't work. And I tell this to clients all the time. If you have 100,000, and I'll test you on this one, Arthur. Here we go. You ready?
Ready.
If you have $100,000 in an account, I'm your advisor. Our first year, I call you and I say, Arthur, congratulations to me. I got you 10% return this year. Okay. Mathematically, how much money do you have in your account? $100,000, 10% return.
$110K.
Fantastic. Year two, I come to you and say, Arthur, man, I am so sorry. This year we had a 10% drop, but you know what? Your average rate of return is zero. What's the dollar amount in the account?
$99K.
$99,000. So here you are, most people, congratulations, most people don't get that right. Here you are, you're thinking, look, my average rate of return is zero. But then you look at your account and you're like, wait, there's only 99. I lost money. If I'm average zero, how am I dollar amount negative 1,000? This is the mitigation of the downside risk. Because mathematically, Arthur, if you're down 33% like we were in COVID, it's roughly 70% gain to get back to neutral dollar amount.
Right.
So think about that for a second. It took 4 years. Four, from 2011 to 2015 for the S&P 500 to get back to the same dollar amount that it was at the lowest point during the Great Recession. 4 years. So everybody says, look, we've had 9 years of growth on the S&P 500. No, we haven't. Because at the very lowest, it took 4 years. So really, technically, it took 4 years to get back to zero. And we've only had really a growth from 2015 to 2019. So let's be honest about what we're looking in terms of technicals.
Yeah. And that is so key. Since I've started working with SidePocket 3 years ago and working with the team and learning more about this side of it all, where all the attention is always on the crazy returns you get.
Yeah.
But I've learned, wow, you made 50% return on your investment and you could have been wiped out if it went wrong. So it's not really that amazing of a strategy because your risk is way higher than 50%.
And Arthur, that's a great point. Because if you look at professional traders versus retail traders, right? Pension funds, hedge funds, private equity funds, they do not invest solely on rate of return. What they invest in are opportunities that they can mitigate the risk to near zero. Right. So it's not this, oh my gosh, I can get 50%. The private equity guy and the hedge funds and pensions will be like, okay, that's great. Are you risking 50%? Because if that's the case, I don't want to do it. right? They want 3 or 4 time return for a 1 or 1.5% risk. Like they want home runs with very little strikeouts. And if they don't get that, they say, no, I don't care if you give them 100% return. If there's 100% risk, they're going to walk away every day. And so going back to what I said earlier, follow the money. Stop investing like, and I don't mean to pick on aunts and uncles, stop investing like your broke aunt and uncle. Start learning how the pensions and hedge funds invest. They're making a crap ton of money. They always have. They always will. Do what they do.
And you mentioned there's not much support for people with not a lot of investable assets. And there's minimums. Every advisory firm has minimums, $500,000, which like you mentioned, if majority of Americans that have a retirement age have less than 200K, they don't have the access either to that. And yeah, so what resources do they have to count on?
So this is, and I learned this more than ever when I got into the retail side of it. Because I was talking to the founder of the company and it's no fault of his or the industry. It's just at the end of the day, Arthur, everybody's just trying to put food on their table. Every advisor has a family that they need to weigh time and energy to do that. And right. So the problem with the industry is that somebody with $50,000 or $60,000 or $100,000 is not going to put food on that advisor's table. And if you look at it mathematically, it takes the same amount of work to acquire somebody with 100,000 as it does 2 million. And it's going to take the same amount of time to do client service and all that other stuff, onboarding, everything that it takes to manage somebody's money. So it comes down to where is the best my time served? And the unfortunate part, Arthur, is it's the larger people. Okay. And so that's really how Robinhood came about, was how it's an underserved market that needs and this is the thing I was told by a professional a couple of weeks ago. The people that need the education the most are the most underserved. And that is what Robinhood and some of these other platforms started 10, 12 years ago to help serve that market. But the upside, Arthur, is look, the other part of that question is where do they go? One, like you said, podcasts like this. Two, YouTube. But don't be dumb about, and I don't mean dumb, literally, don't be dumb about who you're looking at. Don't listen to people that are trying to sell you a course or a product, or they're trying to sell you a trading platform. Listen to licensed individuals that aren't trying to sell you something, but are honestly trying to give you information to help you increase your financial literacy. There is a difference.
Yeah. Huge.
Yeah.
So what I'd like to ask you here next is a big part of that is also understanding your risk tolerance, right? Yep. And it's not just only how much money you got, what are your goals? And because there's the whole emotional side to it as well, which I've learned is also if you consider, all right, you're a low risk tolerance kind of person on an emotional level, you get yourself into high risk stuff, even if there is an ROI there, like consider that. And then the stress on your body and all of that, it's actually not that profitable. And I'd love to learn more about how you approach helping people understand their risk tolerance and unpack that here to give people something to give the listeners something to chew on and consider that maybe they haven't in the past.
So the first thing, Arthur, is understand that your risk tolerance changes throughout your life. And this very, once again, old school traditional way of assigning risk is that if you're 20 something, your risk tolerance is high. You can be aggressive because you have a time horizon of 40, 50 years. But if you're 80, your risk is low. That's not necessarily true. So you may be risk adverse at 20 because you just have a newborn, right? You also may be, you might want to swing for the fences in your 60s because you're an empty nester and maybe your spouse passed away and now you're just trying to create a legacy. I don't know. There's all kinds of variables in that. And there's multiple platforms online. If you just Google, what is my emotional tolerance to risk? As a firm, as an advisor, we use a system called, it's called Nitrogen. I don't know why they renamed it, but it's called Nitrogen. It's like a 6-question survey that actually quantifies a number. So you have a visual perspective. It's not, it's backed by a lot of data, but it's not just some arbitrary, oh, you're 22, you have this job, you make this much money. Oh, you could swing for the fences, right? And so that's how we do it. But there's an abundance of resources online that help you identify what that emotional tolerance is. Because to your point, Arthur, it's not just about risk and return. It's literally, how do you see money? How are you emotionally attached to it? What's the programming that you've grown up with money? And then at that point, if you go into an investment and you don't understand this, and you really, in your head, you want to drive a minivan because that you're just safe. It's safe. You got airbags everywhere. But really, your investment portfolio is a Ferrari. And you're wondering, why is my portfolio going so fast and it's so risky? I just want to cruise. I don't want to go past the speed limit. And then on the other side of the fence, same thing. You're driving a Ferrari and you're hitting the gas. It's not going anywhere because there's misalignment.
Right.
And so, like I said, there's an abundance of resources. We happen to use Nitrogen, but there's all kinds of them online.
Got it. Thank you for that. And it's in your work with helping people build financial teams and of course, advise on finances, like what do you remember at the end of your life? What do you want to be remembered for?
Ooh, first and foremost is that I help build a legacy for the grandkids. That's the first thing, right? I think what we don't do a really good job of is teaching the youth what we should have learned at their age. Now, whether they listen to us is a whole nother thing. I'm not that old, but I'm at an age that I'm like, look, there's a lot of knowledge that I'd like to share with younger people so they don't make the same mistakes I have, right? And that's the second thing, is somehow, some way, taking the things in my head, and there's a lot I still need to learn. But what I have learned, share that information with younger people so they look at things differently. Because at the end of the day, they're told by some people to just save. The reality is you'll never save your way to wealth, right? There's the latte factor. They all talk about these things. But at the end of the day, you'll never, ever save your way to wealth. The thing that's killing the youth today is the cost of interest. They don't understand the real cost of running that credit card. That is the knowledge. Those are the things I'd like to share with them on really what is that cost of your actions. Everything has a consequence. Mm-hmm. And at the end of days, that's what I want to be known for, that I'm a conduit of information. And my hope is that I can affect people to make positive financial changes in their life to redirect where they're going.
Within that context, what makes you the most proud of the work you do and how it contributes to leaving that legacy?
Arthur, I think I had a client send me a referral a couple months ago. And one of the things that I ask my client, or if I talk to a new client, the first thing I ask, just so we're on the same page, is what did Arthur tell you about me? Because I want to know, if they just said, hey, Mike's a good financial guy, then I've got some work to do to clarify that, okay? But I was sitting down with this new client, Arthur, and I said, hey, just out of curiosity, I like to start all these conversations off with the same question. What did so-and-so say about me? And the client said something that kind of threw me back. It was probably one of the best referrals I've ever gotten, ever. And the client said this: what she told me is that you build financial teams and you're going to be my financial watchdog.
Nice.
And I was like, wait, what? I don't even know what a financial watchdog is, but that's amazing. And that, Arthur, is at the end of the day, I don't care if clients work with me, right? Our process is education and step back. Provide education, step back, let the client absorb it, understand where they are, meet them where they are, and then guide them through a process. And I hope that they see the value that we provide in the knowledge that they'll want to work with us. And then that equates to referrals like, you'll be my financial watchdog.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And you mentioned earlier in this chat talking about how about the different trends happening where more people are getting more access to opportunities and education to help grow their wealth, crowdfunding, YouTube. What do you see on the in the horizon within the next like couple of years? What are you hopeful for that in the industry of helping people build wealth? How do you see it getting better and having the opportunity to get better for people?
Well, I think it's there, Arthur. I think the platforms are there for it to get better. I think people are, in general, they're preoccupied with a lot of things that I'm not saying they shouldn't be preoccupied with, but are in the grand scheme of things are not important. As an example, I don't mean to get political, but I don't care what side of the political fence you fall on. They're not coming to save you. So stop fighting for either party. Stop fighting amongst each other. Learn how to take care of your life. And there's an old saying, and I don't know how old it is. I just say old, but I follow every day. There are three types of businesses in this world. There's my business, your business, and God's business. And I can't affect God's business and I shouldn't be in yours. Mm-hmm. So focus on what you can control. Your knowledge, your expertise, focus on your money, growing your money, and understand that the tax code is there available to you. You just need to know the rules. And if you do that, then there's an abundance of platforms that you could take advantage of on a tax efficient level to get you to where you want to be, not your parents, not your brother, not your neighbor, you, your financial plan, your vision. Stop looking to others to give you what your vision is. Figure out what you want. Go build that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there's plenty of tools and it's just a matter of choosing to be proactive and taking advantage and learning how to use them.
That's it, because everything. And Arthur, I'm glad that you mentioned that. Because if you look at it, an annuity, life insurance, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, ETFs, cash, crowdfunding, they're all tools. That's all they are. And they're nothing more than that. And there are consequences to all of them, right? There's investment risk, interest rate risk. There's all kinds of risk to every one of them. But mm-hmm. if you, and this is my problem with a lot of advisors, is that they want to sell you something. But if that tool is not what you need, then don't buy it.
Right.
Understand, like you go into the garage, you know what a hammer does, right?
Yeah.
So think of any instrument, any financial instrument as that hammer. Do you know what you're using it for? Not because the salesperson selling it to you, not because they say that you need it, but do you understand it? And do you understand the consequences to getting that? And if you don't understand the consequences, take some time, understand those, and then make an educated decision.
And then you're empowered to manage risks and
absolutely
navigate, you know, your life in the direction you want it to go.
Absolutely. 100%.
That's awesome. So within all this, the whole investment landscape of all these different tools, how do you see Side Pocket fitting in there?
So that's a big question, Arthur, because I think out of a lot of the platforms that I looked at, and there's a lot of robo-advisors out there, right? Yeah. But once again, the different levels of participation within the app and within what you guys do allows for individuals to get the risk tolerance, understand what that is, but then understand that there is a layers to that, to the investments that manage that risk. So it isn't necessarily about rates of return again, although there are great rates of return, it's on there. But it's about how do we manage that risk side of it by getting out of positions that are trending down. And it depends on how aggressive you want to be. And that's all there. And so I think where Side Pocket is taking, well, let's call it Robo, what's that first? Oh, Robinhood. Let's say Robinhood was the first to market like Bitcoin, right? There's a lot of technology that's changed. And where Side Pocket is positioned is in a better technological position, right? And I'm not sure Robinhood's kept up with the technology or some of these other younger or older platforms, But that's the one thing that I've noticed first and foremost with talking with you and looking at the app is you do what we do for high-end clients for people that need the most help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great. Very well put. Because again, our whole team comes from working in institutions and managing billions of dollars. And again, you don't have access to that. And now with technology, like you mentioned, automation, fractional shares, it's a lot easier now to make it available to have that kind of management available for anybody with a lot less than typically required.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I would put money on this. The reason why, and I say this because our founders at our firm, they started their firm because they saw the broken pieces of the industry and they did not want to go there. They did not want to get in trouble for selling a product to a client that's best for the client, but not good for the firm. And so I do believe that the founders of SidePocket, and I've never met them, but I'm going to venture to guess and I put money on it. Yeah. They did build it to make money, but at their core, they did it because they saw all of the things that were broken with the system and they wanted to create the value to help that underserved market. That market that has $10,000, $15,000, $100,000, hell, $200,000. Most typical advisors will not take on a $200,000 client, right? So this is where their core value is, this is broken. We need to fix it. How do we do that? And they went and built it.
Yeah.
Definitely. And I don't even know the dudes, but I'll tell you, high degree of certainty, that's why they did it.
Yeah. We've had people ask, like, if you're doing so great, why don't you open up a hedge fund and make all the money? That doesn't help us achieve our mission. And That's definitely there. Thank you for that. Thanks for recognizing that after just our limited time getting to know each other. And with that.
Arthur, that's the due diligence, Arthur. Look, it's taking time, you guys, right? Taking time. This is your financial life. I can't stress that enough, Arthur. Take the time. We're on a one-way ticket, and I don't mean to be morbid, but we get one shot at this thing called life. Take the time. Stop. Look at where you're wasting time. Just take a, I'm not saying to stop. Go scroll Instagram. That's fine. But don't do it for 2 hours. Do it for one. Take the other hour and learn something that's going to better yourself, that's going to teach you how money works. Learn about the rates, the new National Association of Realtors settlement is going to affect the whole landscape of real estate. Do you know about that? You should know about that, right?
Yeah. It's crazy that you mentioned that. I have some friends in that space, and now, you know, the buyer's commissions and all of that, there's so much going on. It's going to make a big difference.
Huge.
Man, oh, no, that was fantastic. And like with everything we discussed with education and tools, and this might be redundant, but would love to close that with, what advice would you give to someone considering getting started with SidePocket?
Ooh, start. Just start. Like people think when I work with clients on companies that have 401ks and they don't invest in their 401ks because they think all this money is going to come out of their paycheck. In reality, it's not. And what I tell people is that the other perception is that they need to start with hundreds of dollars. You don't. Whatever the minimum is, start with that, right? And the idea is just, it doesn't have to be perfect. Just start. Do something. Don't go out for a weekend. Don't go out for two weekends. Don't buy your buddies beers. Don't go to dinner with those four girls or those four guys. Girls don't pay for dinner anyways. Like, look at where you're spending the money and the value that it's providing you. Emotionally, physically, all of the above. And reassess where you are and where you want to be and just transfer that money for two weekends. Like, I know dudes that spend $100 a weekend on alcohol.
That's it?
Here in Utah, it's a little bit cheaper, right? But, okay, and the bars aren't open as long either. But yeah, let's just say on a weekend, it's $200. I'll tell you, not getting off into the health side of things nowadays, but that $200, two days, you can live without going out for 2 days.
Yeah, easy.
Like, just get started. $10 a day, put it into a savings account. Grow it until you have the minimums, right? $20. Stop going to Starbucks. It's shit coffee. Sorry.
No worries.
Brew it at home.
I will not edit that. That was great.
There is something to be said about the latte factor, right? Put that money aside. Do something, anything. Don't diminish your life. I'm not saying to stay home, be a hermit. What I'm saying is, instead of going out two nights, go out one. Instead of going out to dinner four nights, go out two. Anything you can to get started, but get started today.
Yeah. Very well put. Thank you, Mark.
You're very welcome, man.
Yeah, really appreciate having you on. I think this is a fantastic podcast. Really excited to get it out there. And definitely look forward to having you on here again sometime in the future.
Yeah, you let me know how I can help. If there any questions come up, I'm happy to work through them. If I don't have an answer, Arthur, I will find one. I will get it to you, and we'll help as many people as we can.
Sounds like a plan.
This podcast is sponsored by SidePocket, the only automated robo-advisor on the market that combines multiple tactical asset allocation investment strategies to generate returns. If you don't have the time to professionally trade and you're tired of being at the whim of the market's ups and downs, consider using SidePocket to automate your investing. SidePocket monitors the markets and automatically rebalances your holdings each month for you to maximize returns while protecting against losses. Losses are not a one-to-one relationship. When you lose 50% of your portfolio in a bad quarter, it requires 100% return the next just to break even. That's why SidePocket applies sophisticated quantitative methods, including tactical asset allocation, to systematically minimize these drawdowns and consistently protect and grow your hard-earned savings. To learn more, visit SidePocket.com.